All right, welcome back in. Zach Gelb here with you on The Fan, Sports Radio 66, 101.9 FM, as we're continuing to recap week two in the National Football League for the New York Giants and also the Jets. As the Giants, they can't get on the field quick enough after last week's performance in Dallas. They will have the Texans coming up on Sunday and the Jets with a quick turnaround up against the Cleveland Browns. Now let's welcome in a longtime football writer in this area, now working as a contributor for The Athletic, also has a brand new book coming out on October 9th called How About Them Cowboys, and that's Gary Myers, who's kind enough to join us right now on The Fan. Gary, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm doing great, Zach. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fantastic, and I appreciate you coming on. Let's get started with the New York Giants, who, after two games, it looks like a team very much that replicates last year. And the thing that stood out to me the most on Sunday night, you knew that the Cowboys were going to come out with some fight, but the Giants just had no interest in punching back. They got beat by the big play early, and then that offense just continues to get spun around like a turnstile in Penn Station. That offensive line is horrible, Gary.
Very surprising that that Dave Gettleman put together an offensive line that can't pass block or run block. If you remember when he was introduced as the Giants general manager a couple days before the final game of the year, he talked all about hog molly.
Yeah, the hog mollies.
Offensive linemen, and how that was the key to football, is you had to put together a good group up front. And by the looks of this, I can't say it's even as good as the group they had last year, because it was last year at the beginning of the season, they had Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh, you know, two players. And now you just don't even know if there's an anchor on this line. Nate Solder, who's one of the highest-paid offensive linemen in NFL history, is you know, protected Brady well for all those years, but I don't think you ever looked at him as being, you know, this real shut-down left tackle that you can count on to keep the pass rushers out of the quarterback's face all the time. And he's been a big disappointment for the first couple of weeks of the season.
The coach wasn't aggressive early on, elected to punt it when he could have went for it at midfield. And this team, they just didn't look like they were ready. Just how about Shurmur through the first 2 weeks? The Jaguars game, I get it. They're a good team, the Jaguars. But this one against the Cowboys was really a head-scratcher.
Yeah, and you know, the message that he sent to his team on 4th and inches on the first series, was the first series of their first possession, I can't remember. It was one of the first possessions of the game, down 7-0. Yeah, I think it was their first possession. They needed to establish something right then, and he needed to show confidence in his offensive line, which has been taking a beating, you know, publicly. And by punting in that situation, I just think he sent a really negative message to his team. You know, the other part of it being, Zach, you know, if you're going to take Saquon Barkley with the 2nd pick in the draft,
run the ball with him there. Let's go. You know,
yeah. I mean, give him the ball. If he can't pick up a couple inches, and at that offensive line that's completely restructured can't create a little space for him to pick up a couple inches, then I don't know what he was doing and how he put together this team. So I think that said a lot. Picking up a first down in that situation could have potentially taken the crowd out of it a little bit, and it would have kept the drive going if they picked up the first down. Obviously, the negative is if you miss, then you've created a short field for the Cowboys. But coaches need to have a little faith in their players, and they need to assess the situation. The crowd was really into it at that point. The Cowboys had scored on a long touchdown pass on the 3rd play of the game, and the Giants needed to take back the momentum, and Shurmur punted instead.
I know it's tough when you're operating an offense, when you're getting no time to even think, when you look at the quarterback and Eli Manning, and there's a ton of checkdowns because of that, but they're also throwing short of the sticks on 3rd down when you need to try to go past the sticks. Just how do you evaluate the play of the quarterback right now in Eli Manning?
I mean, not good, but that's not any breaking news. But he hasn't played well. I think, you know, for a couple of years, I thought the best game he played probably in the last 5 years was the playoff game in Green Bay that the Giants wound up getting blown out of. But it was so cold that day, and I thought he threw the ball better than he had all season. And he had a couple of passes dropped, including a touchdown by Beckham, if you remember, early on, that changed the complexion of the game. But what I see in Eli right now is a quarterback who has been hit so many times over the last few years that if he's not going down early before the rush gets there, then he's getting rid of the ball early on these checkdowns to Barkley. And the Giants' deep passing game has pretty much been eliminated. They've complained a lot about not having an answer for the two-deep zone, and you know, the Cowboys played a two-deep zone the other night. They stunted a lot on the defensive line. They blitzed a lot, forcing Barkley to pick up the blitz instead of allowing him, you know, to get deeper into his patterns. But I just, you know, I've watched this game for a long time, and the signs are pretty clear to me that Eli just doesn't have much left. And people can defend him and say nobody can function behind the offensive line. And to a certain extent, you know, that's certainly true. But I wouldn't say that Aaron Rodgers has had the best offensive line in Green Bay over the last 3-4 years. I know he's gotten hurt a bunch, but when he's in there, he's been very productive. A quarterback has got to rise above and lift the team around him and find ways to make plays and to find completions. And I just don't get the feeling that Eli is capable of doing that anymore.
How can he try to help out the offensive line? And I know they're not doing him any favors, but maybe I know that you don't want to try to get the ball any quicker because then everyone's going back to the checkdowns. But we all know Eli is not the most mobile person in the world compared to when you look at someone like Aaron Rodgers, like you bring up. So how does he try to help out that offensive line, even when they go out and improve it and still there's no answers for this offensive line?
Well, what they need to do is get the ball in the hands of Odell Beckham. And they need to do it on something other than these slant patterns where he then has to break three tackles or run away from three defenders in order to pick up any yardage. And the only way to really do that, if your offensive line can't handle the one-on-one matchups, is to keep some extra blockers in. So if they have to keep two tight ends in to block, then you just count on Beckham trying to beat his man or beat double coverage and Sterling Shepard to do the same. But yeah, you have to find a way to get the ball down the field. What the Giants were doing the other night, you know, it was one of those games where the field felt like it was 200 yards long every time the Giants had the ball. And in the 10 yards they needed to pick up a first down, it felt like 30 yards. And listen, their team that they have right now is their team. There's no major moves that are made during the course of the regular season, you know, the Josh Gordon stuff, you know, notwithstanding. So the Giants have to, I mean, the coaches got to figure this out. These are their players. This is their team. They've known this for a while. They put together this team. And with all the optimism that came out of training camp, they obviously felt it was good enough to win. So either it was a terrible miscalculation or the offensive line is just slow to develop and get cohesive, or it's bad coaching. And two games is much, much too early to throw up the white flag and say, okay, it's going to be another 3-13 season. But you just haven't seen a lot of positive signs in the first two games.
Talking to Gary Myers right now, Zach Gelb here with you on The Fan. However, if this team goes to 0-3 on Sunday, you will start to get more and more of those 3-13 season thoughts again. And hey, you look at Houston, their offense right now has been having major problems. Their offensive line's not that good, but that defensive line, and the Giants haven't been able to get pressure, but that defensive line for the Texans, we know they get after the quarterback.
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing, I looked this up, you know, Dak Prescott was sacked 6 times by the Panthers in the first game of the year, and then the Giants didn't bring him down at all. Deshaun Watson's been sacked 7 times in the first two games, but he's also rushed 84 yards. So, what that would indicate to me is maybe he's not quite as elusive in the pocket, but once he breaks out, that he can still pick up a lot of yards. And I don't know what the status is yet of Olivier Vernon, but the Giants have really missed him the first 2 weeks. They have 1 sack in 2 games, and it's very hard to win in a league that has taken away so many of the weapons of the defensive backs to slow down their receivers. It's very hard to win when you don't get a pass rush, and the Giants just haven't had a pass rush for a couple of weeks. On the flip side, you know, is J.J. Watt back to being the way he was a couple of years ago? Is Clowney healthy, and will he cause a problem? If both those guys are 100%, I think Clowney missed the game the other day, if I'm not mistaken. You know, if those two guys are getting pressure like they usually do when they're both on the field together, then you wonder how are the Giants going to block those guys. And I don't know. I'm just really surprised at how bad the offensive line has been, because I know how much of a priority Gettleman has made it.
Talking to Gary Myers right now. Let's transition into the Jets. This year for me with the Jets is not about wins and losses, and I think they'll get out to a good start with the early goings of the schedule. Disappointing loss up against the Dolphins, but we all know it's about the quarterback, and yes, he's had some turnovers, but a lot of bright things to see so far early on with one Sam Darnold.
Absolutely. I think this whole season is dedicated to the development of Sam Darnold. Every rookie quarterback, no matter if he's the first pick in the draft or, you know, a second round pick or whatever, if he plays his rookie year, there's always going to be bumps in the road. I remember at Elway's first game in 1983, and I believe he was 1 for 8 for 14 yards in the first half, and then Dan Reeves benched him, and then he benched him at halftime the second week. But obviously he went on to be John Elway. All of these quarterbacks have these kind of moments where they throw the batter interceptions in the end zone, like Darnold did the other day. But you have to let them go through these things in order to get to the next step. That's why I felt, as long as the Jets felt confident their offensive line can protect Darnold and not turn him into David Carr, who was sacked 76 times as a rookie, then absolutely, definitely play him to open the season. And I think they're protecting him well enough. He's going to make mistakes, and the Jets just have to hope he grows from it. But exactly, if they finish the season, regardless of how many wins, because you don't want to have a 3-13 season.
But you just need to have that belief that this guy is the future. That's what it is to me.
Exactly right.
Like when I was in Philadelphia, Carson Wentz's rookie year, it wasn't everything great. And I know they moved a lot quicker than what people thought, but they were 7-9, and Wentz's touchdown to turnover ratios weren't fantastic. But you saw the little things at the line of scrimmage, his leadership, that made you think this guy's going to be, you know, a future star for your franchise.
Right. So I think what I was going to finish saying before is, you know, just to sum it up, as long as the arrow is pointing up on Darnold at the end of the season, and there's not a lot of questions whether, you know, is he the right guy? Would they have been better off taking Baker Mayfield, you know, or doing something else? As long as the Jets and the fans feel really good about Darnold at the end of the season, then whether they win 7 games this year or whether they win 5 games, it really doesn't make a difference. The whole thing is making sure, starting from the first day of the off-season program in 2019, that Darnold is solidly entrenched and confident, and the Jets have confidence in him, and that he can put together a big season next year. It's really all about next year, about getting the experience this year to get him for next year.
Now, I'll transition, and it may not be the best timing of things right here, because we're talking about how we don't really care that much about wins and losses this year. But when you get to the short turnaround on the game on Thursday, you know, this is an early fun matchup. Usually you look at Jets and Browns, and you wouldn't be, you know, jumping at it to go tune into this game. But the Browns, even though they're 0-2, they've been a fun story, and they've been choking it away at the end. And the Jets, obviously, it's all around Darnold. And I think this is a nice little test for both teams, and we're going to see, you know, maybe after this game, what direction these two teams are really moving in, and by how competitive a game this is.
Yeah, I just wish that Baker Mayfield was starting for Cleveland. Then it would really be a fun game to see those two kids on the field. Yeah, I mean, Cleveland should really be 2-0. I think they've missed either 12 or 14 field goals and extra points in the first two games.
Against two good teams, too.
Yeah, I know. They should have beaten Pittsburgh, and they definitely should have beaten the Saints. I don't know how you come out of training camp with a kicker who can't make these kicks, who's missing extra points, and why Dan Bailey was sitting and waiting to be signed and didn't get signed, you know, until the third week of the season. But that's another story. I think it's pretty clear, right, that the Patriots have taken a little step backwards here. They always kind of get off to a rocky start, but unless Josh Gordon really fits in, I think they could take a step back. I'm never sold on Miami, and Buffalo stinks. So the Jets have a chance to at least potentially finish in second place in this division, and by next year be able to make a run at the Patriots. And games like Thursday night in Cleveland against a team that's won one game over two full seasons plus this year, you know, is a game that the Jets should win. They're just a better team than the Browns right now. And this would be a nice way to start the season with two victories in the first 11 days of the season. It's, you know, 2-1, I think the Jets would have signed up for 2-1 after three games, knowing they had to play three games in 11 days. And on the flip side, if they lose to the Browns, then all the good feelings about what happened to Detroit start to dissipate. They don't play another game for another 10 days.
Yep.
So I think this is somewhat of a measuring stick game to see where these Jets are at right now.
On the way out with Gary Myers, since you are a Hall of Fame voter, I have to get your take on the letter that some of the Hall of Fame players did release with their latest demands. What did you think about that from not that long ago?
Yeah, the one problem I think I had with it is they want the health insurance, absolutely, for them and everybody else who's played the game. But why are they only asking for annual salaries for themselves?
I'm with you. Because, like, you look at some of these players, you had offensive linemen in front of you that don't get the notoriety. Or, you know, if you are a different player, there's the other players on the team that played a role into your success as well.
Absolutely. And that's not even the issue, really, to me, is who are the most needy? There's a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame right now who are very well off. A lot of it because they are in the Hall of Fame and they get a lot of situations where they can do autograph signings and
sure.
and really market their names. A lot of the players who are struggling, or probably most of the players who are struggling, are not in the Hall of Fame because there's just so many more of them than Hall of Fame. So to me, they separated themselves from everybody else who's played the game but is not in the Hall of Fame. And I didn't like that. You know, then you have the issue of, does the Hall of Fame, is the NFL responsible for putting these guys on salary for the rest of their lives? I mean, I don't have a job like that. I don't know many people, you know, other than these executives or corporations, when they get buyouts or early retirement, that are kept on the books for a lot of years. I mean, why should these football players be paid a salary for the rest of their lives? The health insurance, I just think, is a different issue because I do agree that they didn't give them enough information. And maybe the NFL teams didn't have it at that point about the dangers of concussions, and they weren't able to make educated decisions on whether to play or not play. And I think there should be extensive health coverage for all these guys. But whether they should get salaries for the rest of their lives, I'd have to think about that one some more.
Well, Gary, I appreciate it. Once again, the book is How About Them Cowboys? It comes out on October 9th. And you could also read Gary Myers now at The Athletic. Gary, thanks for the time as always. We appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Zach. You're welcome.